In our last session, we explored the ninth verse of Rupa Goswami's Tripitaka. Let's remind ourselves of what he has to say in that verse. The holy place known as Mathura is spiritually superior to Vaikuntha, the transcendental world, because the Lord appeared there. Superior to Mathurapuri is a transcendental forest of Vrindavan because of Krishna's Rasalila pastimes. And superior to the forest of Vrindavan is Govardhan Hill, for it was raised by the divine hand of Sri Krishna and was the site of his various loving pastimes. And above all, the super excellent Sri Radhakund stands supreme, for it is overflooded with the ambrosial nectarian prem of the Lord of Gokul, Sri Krishna. Where then is that intelligent person who is unwilling to serve this divine Radhakund, which is situated at the foot of Govardhan Hill? So in our last session, we explored each of these places within the hierarchy that Rupa Goswami has given through the eyes of the hearts of our acharyas. And it was very, very sweet, very, very illuminating and nourishing to hear about the Dham, different aspects of the Dham, as they see and experience it. Today, the thought came automatically, what's it take to enter into this place, really? That's the thought that came when you hear the acharya speaking on these sacred places. But today, by the mercy and potency of Sri Guru and Gauranga, what I want to explore is how we can best interface with these holy places to in fact gain entrance, factual entrance, into them. So I wanted to start with reading something and discussing something from Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakura. It's on page 636. Here he is exploring the topic of Vrajavasa and Vrajavasis. A lot of talk about it. Let's see what he has to say. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his followers adored the land of Vrindavan and its vicinity as the highest Leela Bhumi, place of pastimes of Lord Sri Krishna. Being a non-different manifestation of Golok Vrindavan, the vertex of the spiritual universes. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu declared that to reside in Vrindavan is a principal constituent of bhakti. And in Mathura Mahatmya, Sri Rupa Goswami ascertained that to quit one's body in Brajamandal guarantees entrance into the eternal life in Golok Vrindavan. Accordingly, many people come to Vrindavan to live in Vrindavan, which was studded with innumerable temples and ashrams. Yet Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur pointed out that various non-devotees had also settled in Vrindavan, many for solving their economic problems by becoming beggars. He did not recognize them as genuine Vrajavasis, but as intruders like Agha, Bhaka, and Pratana. Those who entered Vrindavan with a deceptive attitude and harbored in their hearts a most malicious spirit of envy towards Krishna. He stated that although anyone living in Vrindavan is benefited one way or another, the real Vrindavan is appreciated only by a pure devotee. Vraja means to walk. Anyone always walking the path of satisfying Krishna is a Vrajavasi. It's a beautiful definition given by Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakura. I'll read it again. Vraja means to walk. Anyone always walking the path of satisfying Krishna is a Vrajavasi. Vrajavasis are all nitya siddhas, are free from illusion, are followers of the principles of Vaishnavism, are simple, and a sincere friend of lifetimes. To instruct materialistic persons, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu visited Vrindavan and took darshan of the pastime places therein. Forgetting this, conditioned souls accept Vrindavan as their field of enjoyment within the material world and thus rebel against Sri Mahaprabhu's teachings. The manner in which the Prakriti Sahajas conceive of the Dharma and proclaim themselves Vrajavasis or Dhamvasis is actually quite different from factual spiritual residence in Vrindavan. For by taking it as a place for their sense gratification, they make their residence into the material world and increase their material disturbances. This is not the attitude of pure devotees. Even though Swarup Damodar is an eternal Vrajavasi, from accounts of his activity, it is not heard that he ever visited Bhumi Vrindavan, Vrindavan manifested on this plane. Similarly, there are no authorized documents stating that exalted personalities such as Pundarik Vijayanidhi, Sri Haridas Thakur, Sri Srivas Thakur, Sri Sivananda Sen, Sri Ramananda Roy, Sikhi Mahiti, Madhavi Devi, Narada Panda Goswami ever visited Vrindavan. So if we remember what we were hearing in our last session, Prabhupada was making the point very strongly that factually speaking, Vrindavan is not on any map. Vrindavan resides within the heart of the pure devotee, manifests there, and becomes Krishna's playground, Radha Krishna's playground. So we're getting the idea that these people, I mean, you can't get any more Vrajavasa mentality than Sri Damodara. But he never entered Vraj. So it doesn't mean that he wasn't a Vrajavasi. His mind and heart were absorbed there. How else could he support Mahaprabhu's ecstasies? But he wasn't physically there. So then, if we can be physically here and heart here as well, heart and mind here as well, that's a real boon, especially for a sadhaka. But it doesn't always work that way. Sometimes we may not be living here physically, but we'll be living here heart-wise, absorption. Notwithstanding, popular opinion is that many persons devoid of Sudha Bhakti, Prakriti Sahajas, Kamis, Gyanis, and others, with intentions separate from service to Krishna, also visit, see, and reside in Bhumi Vrindavan. Such Vrajavasa may bestow upon persons devoid of Bhakti the fruits of going to Swaga, of Mukti, or those fruits attained through renunciation of both sin and piety. The proper and true transcendental Vrindavan Vasa is attained by those possessed of spotless spiritual vision. According to the stanza, Pramanjana Charita Bhakti Galochanina. In the next period, that is after Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's disappearance, Srila Narottam Das Thakur in Katuri and Srinivas Acharya in Jajigam, and after that, Sri Jagannath Das Babaji in Gaurudesh, Sri Bhagavan Das Babaji in Kalna, Sri Gokisho Das Babaji in Navaritam, and Srila Bhakti Vinod Thakur in Kolkata, was solely devoted to Srinam and certainly did not live anywhere but in Vrindavan. You see the point he's making here, that it's a matter of consciousness is more important than actual physical residence. Those persons who have developed a strong desire to unceasingly serve the Lord are entitled to go to Vrindavan. Foolish persons, situated outside Krishna's internal energy and primarily concerned with boarding and lodging, lack eligibility for entrance into the Vrindavan that eludes material vision. Vrindavan is not like other ordinary places meant for eating, sleeping, and so on, or for the mundane proclivities of acceptance and rejection. So he's made it very, the statement is made very subtly, but what he's saying is that if you're on the mental platform, Vrindavan is not for you. This supramundane land is the eternal place of worship for devotees firmly attached to Krishna and free from desire for material enjoyment. Sri Sanatana Goswami set the standard by taking shelter at Sriman Mahaprabhu's lotus feet And being empowered by His mercy, one becomes qualified to enter and reside in Vrindavan. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur further elaborated, "So how to think that by buying a ticket they will go to Vrindavan and engage their bodies, saturated with the consciousness of I and mine, in sense enjoyment? This they call Brajavasa. And the immorality, debauchery, cheating, avoiding service to real Vaishnavas, avoiding chanting the names of the Lord and seeking fame, this they call Hari Bhajan. While giving up worship of the Lord's devotees, they make a show of living in Braj. With a material body, they try to enjoy Krishna. So many simple persons have mustered together in Vrindavan and Navadvip. Absorbed in satisfying their senses, they do not understand a single word of the pure Vaishnavas, and instead commit offences at their lotus feet. Sri Chaitanya and the Goswamis are merciful to those who worship the devotees of Krishna." Shortly after completing the 1932 Braj Mandal Parikram, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur suddenly clapped his hand to his forehead, exclaiming, "I am so unfortunate to have travelled throughout Braj Dham, yet not to have found a single Vaishnava." His astonished disciples questioned how that was possible, since they had observed many Vrajavasis strictly following vows and worshipping the Lord by chanting, reciting shastra, worshipping deities, and performing various other services. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur replied that all such sadhus were simply Kanista Arikaris. In a lecture during his last visit to Vrindavan, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur noted, "Bhagavan was present at Sashi Sai for many days, but Sri Gosham, the preceding day, was singing the Bhagavatam verse, Yati Sujata Charanam Bhajaham Staneshu, revealed the glories of this place and manifested his dancing lila. The Goswamis in the line of Sri Gosham were also ignited by sentiments similar to his. Yet nowadays there is no one here with whom to discuss or from whom to hear such topics. Despite his disdain for unqualified persons claiming to be Vrajavasis, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur accepted even the insects of Vrajmandal as Vrajavasis. When some disciples tried to shoo away flies buzzing around him during a lecture in Mathura, he said, 'These are all Vrajavasis, you should not disturb them.'" So you get that he's very discriminatory. That discrimination being transcendental is very subtle. So he's looking at the ego. He's looking at the intention, and from that making his assessment. So mosquitoes are better off than the sahajas. Any thoughts or comments on that? I thought we'd move on and have a look at what he has to say about Parikram. and also have a look at the only Parikram that he did at Braj. He only did Braj Mandal Parikram once. But it's very interesting how he performed it. So first we'll read what he says in theory, and then we'll read about how he actually did it. It's interesting. Let's have a look at 663. This is where he's talking about the ideal way to perform Braj Parikram, and it's from a Harmonist article from 1932. Quite an amazing insight he's giving, and one that we may not be familiar with, certainly don't follow. "The whole attention of the pilgrim has to be given not to the landscape nor to any shrine or figures. It is least of all necessary for him to attend to the activities of himself. It is imperative to turn his attention to the minutest doings and sayings of the sadhu under whose direction he has chosen to perform the devotional journey. This is such a powerful statement, because in effect what he's saying is that if you want to enter into the Dham beyond the sensory perception of what the Dham is, then you can't go by your own limited perception. You have to take shelter of sadhu, and by his guidance, how he's directing you, that will actually give you entrance, not by trying to do it on your own. So it's very interesting what he has to say in this little article. If he goes on indulging his own fancies and viewing with his own eyes the entities on the spiritual plane, he may indeed succeed in deluding himself, but he will assuredly miss the only legitimate object of his pilgrimage. If he attends and lives up to the instructions of his spiritual guide and does not allow himself to be directed by any other consideration, he will automatically find himself on the plane of Achan in the course of performing his spiritual journey by the unsolicited and causeless grace of the Sadguru. The very first principle, therefore, which all intending circumambulators should accept in their heart of hearts, is to attend fully to the instructions of the bona fide guide and prefer following them to every other occupation. If he tries to do so, he will find that the bona fide guide will put him to activities which may be neither such as are to his liking, nor what he has previously arranged for. The Sadguru will upset all his pre-arranged plans. The pilgrim is not expected to be allowed to guide himself in any way. It is the nature of the conditioned soul to be tempted to assume his own guidance, however much he may profess to be guided by another. Quite a powerful statement. So even when professing to be following Guru, how much are we following our own minds, our own whims, in the name of following Guru? We do it. It is not the journey, but the method of its performance that really matters. Another key statement. Any journey that is performed under the lead of the sadhu is a spiritual function. No journey can have any spiritual value that is not so performed. The circumambulation of Sri Brajmandal has the further advantage of spiritual associations, which are of great help to the novice on the path of spiritual endeavor. The novice is in a position on such occasions to be reminded by the sadhu that he is never to attend to the scene at all, because what he will see if he does so is not the thing which he should see, but something else, the sight of which will be instructive of the real function for which he is on his pilgrimage. The sadhu himself will see everything very carefully and minutely, but he will never encourage the novice to any function of the kind. If the novice submits to be so thwarted at almost every step and is prepared to do whatever the sadhu tells him to do with loyal faith, he will have gained the real object of his pilgrimage. Because this is the nature of life in the real world. We're so proud of our independence, but in the spiritual world, we talk about, we don't want authority figures, and we don't want this, we don't want that. Very structured. Even you're looking at Goloka, it's very, very structured. You have authority, they have authority. They have different guns. They have different roles to play in the lila. So it's not that you're ever in a position where you're independently looking at the circumstance or dealing with the circumstance. So what he's actually giving us a little insight into is the reality. And that's how it really works. So if we have that faith, and it's so important to to have faith at least in one devotee. To have more faith in that devotee than to have faith in our mind. There has to be at least one person whom we trust more than our mind. Because otherwise we're going to stay here for a long time. Mind is going to keep us down here for a long time. So that obviously has got to start somewhere. It can't be an overnight thing, overnight change of consciousness. You start by taking little steps and seeing what happens. If that proves illuminating and nourishing and progressive, then we take another step like that. Okay, so now let's have a look at the pilgrimage that he took and how he dealt with that. Sidrani, would you like to read?
In 1932, two consecutive issues of The Harmonist ran the articles Circumambulation of the Divine Realm of Braj and Circumambulation of Sri Navadvip Tham, respectively, and each explaining the proper attitude for undertaking parikram of the dhams and stressing the importance of visiting the dham with an advanced devotee and constantly hearing from him. Then in October-November of 1932, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur led a party of devotees on Braj Mandal Parikram. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur personally led the group of pilgrims on the 168-mile route. Although such devotional expeditions were regularly conducted by other sects, particularly the Vallabha Sampradaya, the Gauriya Math Parikram was one of the biggest ever seen in Vrindavan. Everything was done in a grand way. The devotees walked in procession, headed by the deity of Lord Chaitanya, carried atop an elephant named Kirtanadas, accompanied by a caparisoned horse and a police band. Along the way, six camels were purchased to help carry loads. Also present were two of the Gauriya Math cars sent from Calcutta by train. As they walked, numerous pilgrims carried flags and all chanted in Kirtan. For the convenience of pilgrims from different provinces, lectures and guidance were given in various languages.
You see how incredibly organized Bhaktisiddhanta
is.
Amazingly organized revolution.
Each evening, a small township of almost 100 large tents was arranged in a semicircle, and each group of pilgrims was assigned to a specific section for the night. In the center, there were tents for the deity, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, his sannyasis and other leading devotees. Evening halls were not merely for resting, but for kirtan, harikatha, cooking, and finally honoring the Mahaprasad. Certain wealthy devotees sponsored feasts on different days. Dozens of gas lights and campfires made a pretty scene, yet pragmatism demanded that even in that superlatively sacred place, guards be posted to stave off the dacoits known to infest the locality. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur made concessions for the several participants on the parikram who were not committed devotees. For instance, although it is enjoined that parikram be performed barefoot because the paths of the Braj Mandal were full of thorns, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur allowed the use of rubber-bottomed canvas shoes. The tea drinking was permitted for those thus habituated, yet he forbade participants from taking fruit or flowers from the trees or twigs to use as toothbrushes. He explained, "Everything in Braj is meant for Krishna's enjoyment. The trees are rishis and munis. Do not disturb them." He reprimanded some brahmacharis after being informed that they had broken off twigs at Rasasthali to use as toothbrushes. Each day, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur had one of the noted kirtanyas among his disciples lead Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur's song beginning Radha Kund Tata Kunjat Kutir, which lists diverse sights and sensations of Vrindavan that are udipans for love of Krishna. And throughout each day, he profusely spoke Harikatha. At that time, Braj Mandal, like almost all of the rural India, was materially undeveloped. There were no proper roads, only dirt tracks, and cars were rarely seen. As the party wended through the tranquil pastoral surroundings, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur described the most important of the innumerable places of Krishna Leela and revealed their significance to the accompanying devotees. Srila Vinod Bihari Brahmachari and others would patrol on horseback, keeping the participants in order and coordinating all necessary arrangements. Both at halls and along the way, Brajvasis included many learned pandits residing in Brajmandal flocked to see and hear from Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. He spoke with pandits in Sanskrit, common folk in Hindi and local children in very simple Hindi. Parikram participants were gratified by the ingenuousness and hospitality of the earthy Braj village folk in extending their cordiality towards visiting pilgrims. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur reciprocated by arranging for 3 to 5 truckloads full of varieties of sweets and other Mahaprasad items to be distributed daily to Brajvasis. Baskets full of tomatoes, long white radishes, guavas, and other fruits and vegetables were carried from village to village, and Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur personally distributed Mahaprasad to all, both young and old. He especially liked to feed Brajvasi children, but if his disciples stretched out their hands to receive Mahaprasad, he would say, "No, this is not for you." During the parikram, early one morning in Mathura, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur started speaking to his disciples, beginning by telling them of a saying of his Gurudev's that still rang in his ears. Srimati Radharani is Kangalinira Thakurani, the mistress of the poor. He further explained that Srimati Radharani is herself the embodiment of guileless freedom from any desire other than to serve Krishna, and she can be attained only by persons possessed of the same selflessness. Anyone who thinks himself the owner of anything cannot have Radha. After delivering this impromptu Harikatha, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur suddenly said, "Now Krishna is taking the cows to the forest, so come, we'll also go." Accompanied by a group of devotees, he set off for Vrindavan. When approaching Govardhan Hill, participants were warned not to take any shilas from there. Then, while they were circumambulating, sudden violent wind and rain threw the pilgrims into chaos. The accompanying panda declared that someone must have made a serious mistake, and Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur asked if anyone had taken a shila. A member of the group admitted to having done so, and then replaced the shila, after which the storm immediately ceased. At Radhakund, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur lectured before an audience of 500. The adjacent rooftops were packed with people straining to hear, and in the crowd below there was no space even for standing. At one point in his lecture, he began speaking animatedly on Radha Tattva and then suddenly stopped, silent, overwhelmed with ecstasy. After about 10 minutes, his emotions subsided and he continued speaking. During this visit, the Gaudiya party fed almost 250 Vaishnavas with delicacies like laddu, peda and kachoris brought from the town of Vrindavan in two cars. And Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur expressed a desire to construct a major Radha Krishna temple there with 8 temples for the Ashtakis and the eight principal gopis assistants of Srimati Radharani. Although this first Brajmandal Parikram proved highly successful despite many challenges, it was the last to be conducted under the shelter and guidance of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur.
We'd like to travel on Parikram and Bhaktisiddhanta.
Yes!
The amazing person. Uh-huh. What struck you most, Kiri Mohan?
Many things, Mataji. One is, let me go through it. This, when he forbade the participant from taking the fruits and flowers from the trees and pigs to use it to Krishna, because he is saying that these are rishis, and I felt that we don't give so much attention to all these small, big things that we see them as small things, you know, and we take it for the granted.
Right.
And as we read before that how we see the things from the sadhu's eyes.
Mm.
It's very, very clear when we were reading this.
Richard?
In the first part, the theory, how we gain the real object of pilgrimage by doing whatever the sadhu tells us, not by actually going and doing something, but just following the instructions of the sadhu.
Mm. Very different perspective than the person.
Yeah.
Well, it's the same. I mean, the one thing is that struck me is the cooperation part also among the devotees, and how we were sponsored, and how the tents were used for offering the Mahaprasad, for kirtans, kathas. So, a different kind of atmosphere altogether.
Mm-hmm. Under the shelter or something.
Yeah.
And 1 second.
One was Mataji, how Bhaktisiddhanta ji took so much prasadam for the Brajvasis. And it was a little different. And also he was so strict about things, and still he was flexible enough to let people, the ones who wanted, could not live without the tea, to have them tea. You know. So that was also a little striking, that, you know, he knew who can take what, and then accordingly you know, did that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a very interesting point. But he was able to be, he was very strict in his presentation of the program, but he was also able to be flexible.
Flexible.
That's very, very important. So the detail wasn't, the principle wasn't lost, but he had to occasionally address it. Detail.
Because those people would also benefit by his association, by being in Dham, by listening to his lectures.
Right.
Those who could not have given up tea, but they would benefit, and eventually they would come to that.
You would have.
Yes.
That's true. Okay. Good. Let's have a look at a few things that Prabhupada said. They're also very, very interesting. We're on page 667. These are meditations, little meditations, and they're very, very deep. The appearance of the form of Krishna anywhere, and specifically within the heart, is called Dham. That's something to think about.
Mm-hmm.
The appearance of the form of Krishna anywhere, and specifically within the heart, is called Dham. Dham refers not only to Krishna's form, but to his name, his form, his quality, his paraphernalia. Everything becomes manifest simultaneously. When a self-realized soul acts in his transcendental position, his situation is called Mathura. I mean, this is such deep insights that Prabhupada's giving here. When a self-realized soul acts in his transcendental position, he's acting in his eternal position of service to Radha Shyam. His position, his situation is called Mathura. In other words, when one acts in the process of bhakti yoga, he may live anywhere, but he actually lives in Mathura Vrindavan. Devotion to Krishna, the son of Nanda Maharaj, is the essence of all knowledge. And wherever such knowledge is manifested, it is called Mathura. Also, when one establishes Bhakti Yoga, excluding all other methods, one's situation is called Mathura. So this, hearing this from Prabhupada is so amazing, because this is what he did in the West. He established Mathura in the West. And when you read this, you can understand how he factually did it. What was his consciousness? What was the plan behind his doing that? I want to read that again because it's just so very, very deep. When a self-realized soul acts in his transcendental position, his situation is called Mathura. In other words, when one acts in the process of bhakti yoga, he may live anywhere, but he actually lives in Mathura Vrindavan. Devotion to Krishna, the son of Nanda Maharaj, is the essence of all knowledge. And wherever such knowledge is manifested, is called Mathura. Also, when one establishes bhakti yoga, excluding all other methods, one's situation is called Mathura. So deep. Vrajabhumi refers to mature Vrindavan and Gaur Mandala Bhumi refers to Navadvip. Oh, sorry. Yeah, there's a quote about that. So thank you. Any place where the Supreme Personality of Godhead is present by His name, form, qualities or paraphernalia immediately becomes a Dham. Now this is a very key statement for any of us who happen to have the good fortune of living in Vrindavan or Navadvip, where we have the good fortune of living. Because the Dhams are becoming very rapidly covered. They're being covered by sense gratification, the opposite to what the Dhamma is about. The Dhamma is about service to Krishna. But we see the sense enjoyers are coming in quite large masses, and they're covering the Dhamma. The activity that they're involved in is covering the Dhamma. So then, what is the value of living in the Dhamma? We have to create an environment for ourselves that is the Dhamma. And here Prabhupada is giving the key that any place where the Supreme Personality of God is present, how? By His name, His form, His qualities or His paraphernalia. That place automatically becomes Dhamma. So that means, if you're saying any place, that means even if you're not living in Vrindavan, even you're living in Noida, you're living in Delhi, Gurgaon, wherever you're living, that can become Dhamma. Just by this little formula. Remember that when you go to it? For example, we speak of Vrindavan Dham, Dwarka Dham, Mathura Dham, because in these places, the name, fame, qualities, and paraphernalia of the Supreme Personality are always present. Similarly, if one is empowered by the Supreme Personality of Godhead to do something, the core of his heart becomes a Dham. And thus it becomes so extraordinarily powerful that not only his enemies but also people in general are astonished to observe his activities.
This is Prabhupada.
This is Prabhupada, yeah. Can't help but think of Prabhupada when you read this. So for the soul who's empowered, what does that empowerment mean? It means that Krishna's taken residence in his heart. Krishna is in the Dham, so the heart has become a Dham. And then the potency of such a person, especially when you see the early days with Prabhupada, following Srila Prabhupada series, it is so evident. And like huge Rathi Yatras within a few years of Prabhupada being in America. And when you actually watch it on screen, even though it was that back in, 30, 40 years ago, you can see it's not the material energy at work. It's just so clear that what you're watching is the internal energy at work. Isn't it?
Yes.
It is so phenomenal when you watch those videos. Really something. So yeah, just to have Krishna living in the heart's become his dham, his playfield. He's directing everything. The devotee is actually more like a puppet. Krishna's just moving the puppet, and the devotee is working accordingly. So beautiful. Vrajabhumi refers to Mathura Vrindavan and Gaura Mandala Bhumi refers to Navadvip. These two places are non-different. Therefore, anyone living in Navadvip Dham, knowing Krishna and Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to be the same personality, lives in Vrajabhumi, Mathura Vrindavan. The Lord has made it convenient for the conditioned soul to live in Mathura Vrindavan and Navadvip, and thus be directly connected with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Simply by living in these places, one can immediately come in contact with the Lord. There are many devotees who vow never to leave Vrindavan and Mathura. This is undoubtedly a good vow, but if one leaves Vrindavan, Mathura or Navadvip Dham for the service of the Lord, he is not disconnected from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. At any rate, we must understand the transcendental importance of Mathura Vrindavan and Avadhoot Dham. Anyone who executes devotional service in these places certainly goes back home, back to Godhead, after giving up his body. Thus the words Mathura Bhagavan Yapti Nityam Sanihita Hari are particularly important. A devotee should fully utilize this instruction to the best of his ability. Whenever the Supreme Lord personally appears, he appears in Mathura because of his intimate connection with this place. Therefore, though Mathura and Vrindavan are situated on this planet Earth, they are transcendental abodes of the Lord. One thing that we have to be very, very aware of, because we use it loosely, this term going back to Godhead, going back home, back to Godhead. But we should be aware that it can mean many things. It can mean many things. There is not only one Vrindavan, for example. Someone may, you know, be acting in such a way, they're performing all their duties and doing all the right things, rade rade, everything is there. But the consciousness is not the consciousness of a Vrajavasi. It's the consciousness of a Vaikunthavasi. But the person has attraction for Radha Shyam. So such a person may well end up in a place called a Nan Vrindavan. A Nan Vrindavan is on the banks of the Viraj River, on the other side. And it's Radha Krishna Lila, but it's Aishwarya. They're married, they wear shoes, like that. So, you know, like, we have to be very, very careful. Even within going to Golok Vrindavan, what we see as our goal, even in going there, we have to be aware of the difference between entering there as a tailor for Nanda Maharaj or a close assistant of the Shakyas or the Shakas. So you may go back to Godhead. Maybe Guru Kripa, so many things, maybe there. But then it depends on the consciousness. Mm-hmm. Even we see with Patana, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur talks a lot in this about this in his commentary. Said that she became a nurse. She went back home. But the home that she went to wasn't the home where Yashoda Mai was. And she wasn't a nurse who had close association with Krishna. She was basically serving a nurse. She was a nurse, like assistant nurse. So all these things, all these little details. So never take it cheaply, never take the goal cheaply. Because if you want to actually enter into the close association of those associates who are closely and intimately dealing with Krishna, you have to pay the price. Consciousness has to be evolved. The heart has to be evolved. No free tickets. No free tickets. Any questions on that? It's interesting. You know, like, you're always going to read the fine print. Always going to read the fine print. Okay. No questions on any of that?
In that purport to Srimad Bhagavatam 10.1.28, it says, whenever the Supreme Lord personally appears, he appears in Mathura because of his intimate connection with that place.
Mm-hmm.
So, what is implied by that sentence?
Here we're not talking Mathura city, we're talking the whole mandala.
Mm-hmm.
And what we're looking at is that this is the place that he's brought from the spiritual sky. He doesn't come and perform his activities in the earthly realm, yeah, because he's, you know, he has his taste, his Rasaraj and Rasa Shekara. So So he wants things as he wants things. So he's going to bring his own dharma down. And that will be his realm, that will be his flavor. So it's intimately connected to him, you can't separate it from him. Like that. I also wanted to share with you some very, very beautiful guidelines for our mood and vision. What I've read so far is a little hard hitting. This reminds us of how far we have to go. But I want to sweeten it up a bit because you cannot beat Prabodhananda Saraswati Thakura. He is so amazing. And factually speaking, his Vrindavamangramrita is the book, if you want to develop Vrajnista, Vrajvasnista, that's the book. It's such an amazing handbook. Let's have a look at 669. And remember here, what we're getting insight into is the mood we have to have. We read that we need to take guidance from sadhu to actually enter the dham. But the main reason we take shelter of sadhu is to line up with his mood, his perception, his discrimination. So if we can do that not only by going actively on Parikram, but just by having a look at what Prabodhananda Saraswati Thakur has to say. This is on page 669. I am full of faults and devoid of any good qualities. Alas, I am not even qualified to approach the compassionate great souls. I commit so many unforgivable offences. Still, O forest of Vrindavan, do not reject me, for you are like my mother and I am like your child. Isn't it beautiful? Such a beautiful mood. May the transcendental abode of Vrindavan, which is supremely soft, which is illuminated by the effulgence of various jewels, which is filled with the wonderful sounds of various birds and bees, whose inhabitants are beautiful and attractively decorated, whose trees and creepers are always decorated with many fruits and flowers, and which is the abode of Krishna's divine pastimes, become my life and soul. So he obviously is looking at Vrindavan with the eyes of the heart. That heart has become dumb. So he's giving us insight into the actual realm of Vrindavan, supremely soft, illuminated by effulgence of various jewels, wonderful sounds of various birds and bees. Beautiful meditation. And far preferable to what we'll have to meditate on if we take our external environment. The atmosphere in Vrindavan, if you go down to Lai Bazaar today, will not be soft. It will not be gentle. It will be push and shove. Isn't it? It won't be illuminated by the effulgence of various jewels. It will be this gross fluorescent lights. wonderful sounds of birds and bees. You're going to have horns and Hindi film music. You see? Whose inhabitants are beautiful and attractively decorated. Whose trees and creepers are always decorated with many fruits and flowers. Beautiful realm. This is a realm of a Nitya Siddha. This is his, Vrindavan. O most dear Vrindavan, O supremely blissful Vrindavan, if I could see the beauty of your animate and inanimate inhabitants with millions of divine eyes, if I could smell your fragrance with millions of noses, If I can hear about your transcendental qualities for millions of years, if I could wander about your land with millions of legs, and if I could offer you obeisances with millions of heads, still I would not be satisfied. If you have circumambulated the land of Vrindavan, then what need is there for visiting millions of holy places? If the chirping of Vrindavan's birds has entered your ears, then what is the use of studying the Vedas? If you have uttered the names of the trees of Vrindavan, then there is no need to recite any prayers or mantras. If your vision has fallen on any part of Vrindavan, what is the use of millions of meditations? Rajmishta. Huh? Very special. Oh, it is indeed wonderful that the beasts, birds, men, women, trees and creepers of Vrindavan all possess bodies made of spiritual bliss. They are always jubilant on account of their own glories and influence. Yet unfortunate people, controlled by the illusory energy, see this land of Vrindavan as mundane. Oh my Lord Hari, when will my body become spiritualized? Simply by residing in Vrindavan. The Dham is Sandini Shakti, eternality, potency. If we're in the appropriate consciousness, we're respecting and worshipping that Dham, it's going to secure your whole body. You can become realized just by appropriately, offenselessly living in Vrindavan. The old school Brijvasis say that all you need to go back to Krishna in this lifetime is take a little braj dust on your head, place a little braj dust on your tongue, and pay your obeisances to the Dham. That's all they say you need to do. But that implies that you have faith in those places, that these places are sacred to you. But if we, can you see, like anybody who can't see this, they're controlled by the illusory energy. So we are always, if we're honest about it, we are always controlled by the illusory energy. Isn't it? At least 99% of the time we're controlled by it. So then it's very important if we're going to spend extended, even if we're going to come to a visit to the Dham and not live here, we have to take the time to be reflective. Because if you get caught up in activity and there are just seen around you on the surface of the Dham, you're going to become offender. You're going to be kicked out. Simple as that. Well, it's such a cheap thing to live in the Dham. You have to remember that here, Krishna's the center. In our world, we're the center, right?
Always.
So, most of us have had experience of what it feels like when people that live in that world of me and mine come into Vrindavan and impose that on the Dham. It is a hellish thing. It's a hellish thing. Can you imagine what Vrindavan would be like if only those who are qualified with Ruchi and the Shakti were living here? Only those with Ruchi and the Shakti could visit here.
You won't be able to talk.
We wouldn't have accidents. But it would be a much different world than the way it's evolving at the moment. Just a place to have a high rise, have an apartment, come for good times occasionally on a weekend, like a bit of spiritual, get a few credits spiritually as well. But really missing out. May my head eternally bow down to Sri Vrindavan. May my tongue become overwhelmed by singing the transcendental glories of Vrindavan. May my hands engage in sweeping the fresh groves of Vrindavan. May my legs circumambulate the land of Vrindavan. May my ears engage in hearing the glories of Vrindavan. My eyes in seeing the beauty of Vrindavan. And my mind in meditating on Vrindavan. Where do all living entities attain Krishna? Where are Krishna's wonderful transcendental pastimes found? And where can one see the highest expression of bliss, which comes from worshipping the lotus feet of Krishna? Oh mind, just listen as I tell you the secret. Everything is available in this land of Vrindavan. My only prayer is that the indescribably wonderful land of Vrindavan, which is the abode of the highest transcendental love of God, may manifest before me in its various features, and the golden and blue complexion Shishi Radha Krishna, who enjoy sweet pastimes each and every grove of Vrindavan, may attract my mind to their soft lotus feet. Beautiful prayer. And this is the key, that if we want actual entrance, it will be through service. That's why he's referring here, attract my mind to their soft lotus feet, attract my mind to the service of their feet. Then we have some chance of entrance. Meditate on the abode of Vrindavan with intense love. Roll your entire body in the dust of Vrindavan. Offer your body in the service of Vrindavan. And thus achieve firm love for Krishna. There was one amazing transcendental pastime that I had the good fortune to witness a few years back. I was staying at Radhakund and getting breath there. And I was staying in an ashram that was right on the banks of Radhakund. And while I was staying there, late one night, I think it was four or five men, they'd just done Chaturdham Parikram. And they decided, they were family men and they'd just taken time out from work. Chaturdham, and they decided it won't be complete unless we do Braj Parikram, and in particular we should do Govardhan Parikram. So just spontaneously they decided. So late one night they came in. The idea is they didn't have much time. They'd get up early next morning, do Govardhan Parikram, leave and go back home, having completed the Parikram. So they were up very early the next morning, took their bath, did all the right things, started the parikram. So one of these devotees, super enthusiastic, super enlivened by being in parikram of Govardhan, and they came to the area around Panchari where there's more Brajraj. And he just spontaneously started paying full dandavats. Jai Giraj! Jai Radha Shyam! Dandavat, dandavat, dandavat. And very loudly, very enthusiastically, his whole heart was in calling out to Giraj, calling out to Radha Shyam. And then he paid his dandavats, called out to Radha Shyam and Giraj, but he didn't get up for the next parikram. And he was a bit of a joker. So the other devotees that were with him, they just thought, well,
you know, he's just playing around with us, you know. Give him a couple of minutes. He'll be back on his feet and ready for the next boat, you know. Done with it. He didn't get up. He left his body laying down the mats at Giriraj's feet. Incredible. And then, you know, they brought the body back to Radhakund. All the rites and everything were done. They can't do it right on the banks of Radhakund. You have to have a certain qualification. But, you know, everything was done within the dam. Such an amazing experience. So this idea of roll your entire body in the dust of Braj, you don't see much of it these days. But you know, like 20 years back, what we're reading was quite common. Those days, you didn't have cell phones. And, you know, when you went on parikram, even in Vrindavan you went on parikram, everybody sing bhajans. Whole way around, they sing bhajans. It's really beautiful. Sometimes you see it now. It's not as common as it was in the old days. Let my eyes become overwhelmed by watching the beautiful nectarian forest of Vrindavan. You see, you have to have a certain mindset to be able to do this kind of thing. Just to be absorbed in watching the forest of Vrindavan. We're so rajasic. The mind's got to keep moving, it's got to do something. But here, let my eyes become overwhelmed by watching the beautiful nectarian forest of Vrindavan. Let my intelligence become merged in the nectarian ocean of the glories of Vrindavan. And let my body roll on the ground of Vrindavan, overwhelmed by currents of spiritual bliss. O may I always offer obeisances at the feet of all the living entities who reside in Vrindavan. Once Radha Govinda Maharaj was asked, somebody wanted to live in Vrindavan permanently. He asked Maharaj, how can I best do that? How can I increase my chances of being able to live permanently in Vrindavan? And Maharaj said, don't break anyone's heart. And he wasn't meaning by that only humans. Cows, monkeys, dogs, pigs. Yeah? Don't break anyone's heart. So you have to have, you know, like, it's so beautiful. Even if you just read a few verses of Vrindavan Mahamrita before you take rest, just to get an idea of the consciousness that's required to actually live in this place. Preoccupation is me and mine, the mode is rajasic. What chance do you have of doing anything but making offenses? What's the value? Kamsa was a Mathuravasi. Didn't do him a lot of good. Didn't do him a lot of good. So, you know, like everything has got to do with our consciousness, and our consciousness is so dependent on what great souls like this have to share with us, taking it seriously. Yeah? It's so beautiful. Sri Vrindavan is decorated with many attractive groves for performing unlimited pastimes. It has many inviting lakes full of crystal clear water. The entire tract of land is decorated with many beautiful trees, creepers, and multicolored flowers. It is inhabited by many kinds of birds and beasts who are filled with spiritual bliss. O Vrindavan, you are the place of Sri Sri Radha Krishna's wonderful eternal pastimes. When, O when,
will you become the object of my constant meditation. Oh, when will that auspicious day arrive when the actual glories of Vrindavan will be revealed to me? The scriptures are unable to touch even one millionth of its wonderful glories. Even great personalities like Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva, Lakshmi, Sukadeva, Arjuna and Uddhava are unable to take darshan of its confidential form. And what to speak of others, even the ordinary Vrajavasis cannot see it. Sri Vrindavan exhibits her real form only to those fortunate devotees who have taken full shelter of the lotus feet as Sri Radhika. Yeah. And the beautiful.
Yes.
This meditation on Govardhan is also very special. Would you like to read that? Yes? No?
Yes.
Yes.
Esam Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's Vrajavachan Talmini. Just getting an insight into how these great souls interface with the Dham. The land, he was living there. So just compare how we see Govardhan and how he's seeing it. The land around Govardhan Hill in all directions is filled with many lakes, groves, and other charming places of Lord Krishna's pastimes. Many lovely streams flow from Govardhan Hill onto these lands in all directions. To the east is Dandivatan Kund, where Sri Radhika's handsome beloved remembers it. He begins to tremble, and the hairs on his body stand erect. You know what happened at Dandivatan Kund?
Tax pastime.
Which part, aspect of the tax pastime?
I think they extracted tax from Krishna.
Yeah. So you have the general one that's known, Dangati,
yes.
Mm-hmm.
At the top of the hill, where Krishna demanded tax. Exorbitant. Impossible to pay tax. So Lalita, being the bright one in the group, and also being very bold and arrogant by nature, she said, "You come tomorrow. You come, you know that lake just down the way a bit? We'll meet there. We'll pay our taxes. Come at this time, and we'll pay our taxes." So Krishna was, you know, his dear Lalita, he's just into having a good time and fun. It's going to be fun. So what happened was that Lalita organized all her shakis, a lot of shakis, lakhs of shakis. She organized all her shakis long before Krishna was due. She had them hiding all over the place. And they were under strict orders of what they were going to do. And they were signaling each other with mirrors. Krishna's here now. Krishna's coming. Give me about 10 minutes. They're doing it all by mirror. So what happened when Krishna arrived with all his shakas, so many shakas, they all jumped out and pounced on him. They beat him up. They beat all his shakas up. Tied their dhotis together. Tied the dhotis to the trees so they couldn't move. And then Lalita, being Lalita, she's such an amazing person. You know, she just has a final little touch that makes it perfect. She had a what do you call these mud, this clay?
Clay pots.
Full of dye put on the head of Krishna who was tied to a tree. And all the gopis had insulted and created havoc for the day before.
She had them throwing stones at that clay pot. So the clay pot was disintegrating. And the yogurt was rolling all over Krishna. So, you know, Krishna, for as long as he can hold his profile of being the beautiful, all attractive, you know, friend of everybody, he was okay. But when this happened, it was just too much. And he just broke down and he said, look, that's too much, I'm really sorry, I'm really sorry. I won't ever do it again, I won't ever, because he will do it again. I won't ever do it again, I won't ever do it again. Lalita said, okay, you have to pay your tax. Your tax is that you have to bathe the feet of Radha and the eight primary Shakyas. You have to anoint those feet with chandana. You have to worship those feet. So that place, you have Dandari at the top, and then you have Dandivatankund, which is where that vilapa took place. And then if you go inside, there's a place where you can still, there's a shila, we've seen it on Parikram together. There's a shila with the 8 feet of the Shakyas and Radha's feet. And there's one of the shilas there, if you rub that shila with water, it'll make chandan for you to worship those feet. Very special place. So this is what we're talking, you know, he's just saying to the east of Dandivatankund. And when Shivaradika's handsome beloved remembers, he begins to tremble and the hairs on his body stand up. This is why. You got to know the inside story. I gave him a hard time. To the east of that is Chandrasarovara, where the divine couple enjoyed many rasa dances. The memory of this place makes them dance in ecstatic love. Now it's interesting how Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur is talking here, because when we usually see a place on Parikram, we're interested in how it's affecting us, mm-hmm. our experience of it. But what he's remembering is how they experience it.
Mm-hmm.
You see, such a different angle on it. Southeast of Govardhan Hill is Sankarshanananda Sarovara, and in the east of that is Gaur Theatre, which is scrupulously avoided by Gauri's husband, Lord Shiva. The nectar flood of supreme good fortune rising from his eternal pastimes with her has made her beloved supremely learned in the philosophy of forest pastimes. In between Sankarshan Sarovara and Dandivatankund is Ananda Raj Tirtha, where the Anakut festival delighted the young prince of Braj. West of that are two splendid places in the mouth of Krishna's pastimes. They are Shidangat and Shamanigat, where the divine couple playfully talked and joked. At this place, the divine couple enjoyed the playful quarrel pastime known as Dham Keli. Who would not be astonished by this pastime? When this pastime enters the ears, it makes both the body and the mind dance. Govardhan Hill resembles a gigantic peacock that has Govindakund as its tail. The Manasaganga, where the divine couple eternally enjoys boat sailing pastimes, enters into the waters of Govindakund. If one hears about the divine couple's boat sailing pastimes, he will become stunned in ecstasy, and it will not be possible for him to stop hearing about them. On the Manasaganga shores are many Madhavi vine pavilions with nectar beauty that shines in the three worlds. There the divine couple enjoys splendid pastimes that are eternally remembered in the devotees' hearts. With its nearby forest groves and limitless nectar-trickling flowers in its waters, Kusum Sarovara shines with great splendor. It is the handsome face of Govardhan Hill, the king of mountains. This lake is known as Kusum Sarovara because of its many blossoming flowers, destined to become gopis in the future that grow in its waters. Simply by once bathing in this Kusum Sarovara, now had merely attained a gopi form. This fact is directly confirmed in the words of the enchanting Supreme Personality of Godhead. The Supreme Personality of Godhead eternally enjoys pastimes on Govardhan Hill. He personally lifted Govardhan Hill with his own hand to protect his cowherd associates, who is able to describe the glories of Govardhan Hill, the best of Lord Hari's servants. So exquisite, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's why it's always very valuable if you're not only going on parikram, but you're reading what the acharyas are saying about these places. Because then when you go on parikram, you won't see the refuge and the fighting dogs and, you know, the beggars. You won't see, you won't be preoccupied with that. Your preoccupation will be with what the acharyas have shared with you. And that becomes a refuge, actually. Well, you don't get caught up in the rest. Let's read on about Shyamchand and Radhakund. This is also from Bhajrati Chintami. It's a very wonderful work. Shyamchand and Radhakund are two great floods of the nectar of beauty. They are two great oceans of splendor. They are two beautiful roots from which sweet devotional service grows. They are two jewel mines of love. They are two seeds from which grow the jewel vines of transcendental pastimes. How did they become two splendid and nectar-sweet lakes? By seeing these two lakes, Radha and Krishna believe they are present in them. It is as if they directly see each other there. The wise say that by approaching these lakes, one directly approaches Radha and Krishna. Longing to meet, but forced to remain separate, Radha and Krishna assume the forms of Radhakund and Shyamkund. In this way, they became splashed with the nectar of meeting each other. I think that when Radha saw Krishna, she melted with ecstasy and thus assumed the liquid state of the waters of Radhakund. And in the same way, when Krishna saw Radha, he also melted in ecstasy and became the waters of Shyamkund. In this way, these two lakes bear the names and qualities of the divine couple. Out of great kindness to the people, so they could directly taste their sweetness, Radha and Krishna have become these two lakes. Shining with happiness, the devotees bathe in these two lakes. It's their kindness. Their kindness. And it was, even the water itself tasted sweet up until the 1984 excavation. Before that, the water was very, very sweet in both Radhakund and Shyamkund. But a big mistake was made at that time. They decided that they should put gravel in the bottom of Kankankund. The Babaji Panchayat made that decision. But little were they aware of the sacredness of that place. The last sanskar, the last cleaning of Kankankund cannot be done by a Babaji. They don't have the adhika. It can only be done by Brajvasi Brahmins and Brahmanis. Because the final clean is decided when you see, and you have to have transcendental vision to see it, when you see the celestial serpents who are guarding that realm start to lift their heads. If you're cleaning, I was there when the Brahmins and Brahmanis did it. It was an amazing experience. Nobody else in the scene. Just the Brajvasi Brahmins and Brahmanis. Early one afternoon where everybody else is sleeping. And they were just these amazing chants they were singing. Hypnotic chants they were singing. And then they just, at one point, the head Brahmin said, done. And then they, time to move on. It's an amazing thing. So, that kind of realm, most sacred place in the universe, you're going to throw gravel into that. So this, this is why it's problematic when people are not qualified to move into this area. And the same happened with the trees. I can't remember when he came through and did it. I think it was early 90s from memory. But a land developer decided there's so many trees in Radhakum. The land developer decided to cut them all down. So he just came in one, in a couple of days, cut down all the trees in Radhakum. It's like a desert now. It's hardly any green. So these, it's their kindness, that sweetness. So even the water was sweet before 84. It's not now, it's quite salty. I think these two lakes are the divine couple's love. You see how the heart has to be so gentle? That heart has to be so gentle to be at the end of this realm. These lakes are the divine couple's love. So you're going to go and swim and, kick around and play games? These two lakes are the divine couple's love. They who are fortunate bathe there. Because bathing there is like bathing in their transcendental love. Such a blessing if you're in the right consciousness. Bathing there is like bathing in their transcendental love. These two lakes bear the names of the divine couple. Spelled backwards, the word Sara, lake, becomes Rasa, nectar. They who are aware of this great secret bathe in these two lakes. Wishing to see their sweet pastimes in the forest, the two lakes have become the divine couple's two pet Chakora eyes. Limitlessly beautiful Sri Radhakund is filled with the divine couple's great love. On every side are the groves of Radha's friends, and the humming of many bees. It's a beautiful meditation. Exquisite meditation. The next one is from Prabodhananda Saraswati. This one is also exquisite. This one is Vrindavan Manamrita. And here, he's going to give us an insight into what's actually happening at Radhakund, even visually. We just don't have the vision to see Radhakund. But what he's seeing, you see, when the heart is pulsating with Seva Bhav, you see differently. If the heart is pulsating with Seva Bhav, you're going to see differently than if the heart is pulsating with the desire to enjoy what you're seeing. So his heart, rather than the Saraswati's heart, is pulsating the Seva Bhav. So let's have a look at the Radhakund that he sees. Within the midst of many groves, there is a kund full of crystal clear nectarian water, which is like the essence of the mellows of ecstatic love.
crystal clear nectarian water. Is that what we say? I remember one experience I had many, many years ago, because all of my puja I do is Radhakund water, and so I collected a lot of Radhakund at one time. And one time I made the mistake of going, I just was not thinking clearly, I made the mistake of going after the Mahalasthami snan. So the whole water was slimy with pumpkins, because that's part of the ritual which bhakti's are into. And I thought I should be transcendental to this, because it's put me in this circumstance for a reason. So I'm still going to collect the Radhakund water, and I'm still going to take that. So I was okay with collecting the water. But when I took bath and I went under the water, I was thinking, this water is so slimy. And I got a very distinct message. Your consciousness is slimy, not this water. Open your eyes. I opened my eyes and it was crystal clear. I'll never forget that. Sometimes you just get these little tiny insights by Radha's grace. Even you're a fool, you have absolutely no qualification. Sometimes you just give you a little insight. So, you know, I felt so uncomfortable, but it was me. And when I opened my eyes, it was crystal, I could see very clearly through the water. It was crystal clear water. I mean, like, when the midst of many grows, there's a kun full of crystal clear nectarian water, which is like the essence of the mellows of ecstatic love. The four sides of this kun are studded with various jewels, and the bathing guts are decorated with jewel-studded stairs. On the banks of this lake, there are many jewel-studded raised platforms under the shade of kadamba trees. That's where the gopis sit with Krishna and joke and laugh, play games. For the pleasure of the most beloved divine young couple, this lake is deep in some places and shallow at other places. Various transcendental drinks are manifesting within different parts of that lake for the pleasure of their lordships. I have to go to the local shop. Various transcendental drinks are manifesting within different parts of that lake for the pleasure of their lordships. For their pleasure, many lotus flowers are repeatedly opening and closing. The groves are reflected within the crystal clear waters of this lake. The water of this lake is a reservoir of unlimited fragrance, and its everlasting sweetness repeatedly overwhelms everyone. Various lotus flowers and water lilies increase the beauty of this lake, which is moistened by honey emanating from the trees on its banks. In the middle of this lake is a beautiful grove meant for the divine couple. Well, it appears like an amazing jewel-studded residence that has arisen from the water for the gopis. The shores on the four sides of this lake, as well as the bottom, are adorned with jewels. The waters of this lake are full of lotus flowers. Oh, the four studded jeweled banks of this lake are decorated with many wonderful ornaments, bushes, and rows of fully blossomed kadamba trees, the flowers of which increase the beauty of the entire area. This lake certainly increases the ocean of Shishi Radha Krishna's amorous pastimes. I adore the most dear Kunda, the queen of Vrindavan. Shri Radha and Shamsundar eternally enjoy sweet, blissful pastimes within this Kund. The fragrant water of this Kund is like an ocean of the transcendental mellows of ecstatic love. I take shelter of Shyama's most dear kund,
This is the ornament of Sri Vrindavan. Just by touching the waters of this kund, one experiences a wonderful feeling within one's heart. It is the abode of the mellows of pure conjugal pastimes. The waters of this kund appear like shining gold. The most blissful divine young couple are engaged in eternal pastimes within those waters. Sri Radha Kund is a crest jewel amongst all precious jewels and the decoration on the head of Govardhan Hill. It is very dear to the attractive lotus-eyed Sri Krishna and the enchanting lotus-eyed Sri Radha. At this place, Sri Krishna plays on his flute and displays his enchanting qualities while illuminating the four directions with the rays from his moonlight face. O friends, just meditate on the groves surrounding Radha Kund, which surpass even the topmost beauty of Vrindavan, which are respectfully adored by Sri Hari's beloved Govardhan Hill, and which are filled with the sweetness of Sri Sri Radha Krishna's loving affairs.
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare.
Satyatana, Bhavana, Vishnu, 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 Vishnu,